Welcome, subscribers, to another Healing Wednesday, A Circle of 12. This is our once-a-month free program, so we appreciate our YouTube subscribers, our Healing Wednesday members who receive a program like this every single week, and all the rest of you who are joining us for the first time anywhere. I'm Lee Carroll.
And I'm Monica Marani.
And together, we present all of these shows, and that's the plan, and we've been doing it for some time. We really appreciate the subscription. We also appreciate the fact that you are here. Now, some of you who have seen the program before know that I always say something special right here, and it's always the same. Streaming is different from watching a video. It takes a little more computer power. Sometimes, depending on your internet and ours, it can be frustrating. The picture stops and starts, and you can't refresh, and you lose some of it. The audio is stuttering, all these things. Don't let this bother you. Don't let it frustrate you. We really want you to see this meeting properly and correctly. It's recorded, and there's a wonderful recording available as a replay right after. If you're a member, you'll have that in your members portal. If you're not a member, you can find it on YouTube very, very soon. We make it available for all of you. Don't be frustrated. Go there. The program is the same all the time in the order that we present it. Mon and I have some fun things we like to talk about. Then there is a channeling from Kryon. Then we do an interview with a healer. Today is profound healer. They're all profound, but we say they're always great. They are. And then we do the Circle of 12. All right. I want to get going on some fun stuff.
I know. This is going to be fun, actually.
Yeah, we talk about, and we don't have these things all planned weeks and weeks in advance. We say, okay, what funny thing are we going to talk about, or what profound thing might we talk about here for just a few minutes that has happened to us on the road? And many times to me, even before Monica came along, we have got a lot of stories. Some of them are profound and spiritual and heartfelt, but most often they're just funny. And often they're not spontaneous funny. We make them funny because we have a good time.
And that's what life is about. We're here to experience joy and have a sense of humor when that's what gets you through, really, isn't it?
It is indeed.
Yeah.
And we travel so many different places. And on that subject, when you go to various places, you have different cultures. So you learn about those cultures and you have different things presented. But in this particular first case, this is all going to be about our friend, Greg Braden.
And we actually mentioned quite a few episodes back now that we did have some stories to share, and some of them were related to the pyramids of Egypt and things like that. So we decided that tonight would be the night where we share that with you. And we did kind of pre-plan a little part of what we wanted to share because it comes with some photos.
Yeah, we got some pictures we're going to show.
First
of all, I want people to understand about Greg.
Yes.
Greg is a very good friend. I call him my spiritual brother. And he is a planet changer. What Greg has done as a scientist has really pushed the envelope of, if this is possible, then what about this? He never crosses the line past the good things and peer review and all that as a good scientist would. But he really opens the door to potentials and possibilities. One of the magic places in the world is Peru. Another one is Egypt.
Yeah.
And in both of those places, there's a lot of mysticism. There's a lot of unanswered questions for historians, for everybody. Nobody really has the bigger picture on either of those places.
That's right. So
Kryon has talked about this a lot. Now, Greg has approached this also, and he is an expert in both places. In fact, that and Israel.
I think what's remarkable with Greg is that he has been guiding groups to amazing places for decades.
For decades.
You really just started in 2012.
Yep.
That was your year of branching out and exploring and doing tours to places. But Greg has been guiding, and even places where you wouldn't necessarily go today, such as Tibet. So he's just world traveler taking people on guides. So we kind of turn to him because been doing it for years, and we might have been to a place for the very first time, and he's been there 30 times already.
I told you that our story about Mount Sinai, now if you're a new subscriber, I told you a story about Mount Sinai. Go find it. How about that? And I told you that we had had this exhausting time, and I almost fell over. And I mean, it's just, I was so proud I had climbed Mount Sinai in the dark, and I had a camel and all that. And then I mentioned that I called Greg and told him how proud I was, and he said he'd done it 13 times. I was wrong. He'd done it 30 times. And I understand he had done the long count. This is a joke, and he'll know what I'm talking about. He had gone up the back, and that's 2,300 stairs without a camel, the hard way, straight up or something. And I was just like, I can't even fathom that. So I'm setting the story because here we are in Egypt. Now, he had led, he made Egypt maybe three times a year sometimes in his former, you know, when he was a younger man.
Yes.
And doing different things.
Yes.
And so here we are in Egypt. So we thought we would send him pictures of places we were because he would recognize them.
And we had fun because many of the museums that you visit, a lot of the statues don't have a head on top of it. And as we're walking around this museum and I'm taking these photos, I said to Lee, hey, Lee, wouldn't it be fun to just send a few photos to Greg about our museum trip and let him know how much of an impact he has had in Egypt?
Now these headless statues, people know, is because over the years the head would be decapitated because a new regime would come in and the head would represent like an old philosophy or religion. There was a lot of these headless statues around.
Yes.
And so we decided to put a head on one of them.
Yeah.
Not really, but virtually, and then send it to Greg and say, Greg, were you aware that you are in the museum? So let me just show you the picture, and here it is. Yes, it's faked, folks. It's not real.
we had fun with it, and luckily, Greg has such a sense of humor as well. He immediately saw the humor in what we were doing.
luckily.
Yes.
And I'm glad in this next story I'm going to show you, and this, we may only have time for the Greg stories today, and that's fine. We've got other stories to tell you about Egypt. And I know I'm talking fast because I'm getting excited. But the second story is about the king's chamber.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm not really sure how many of you know what the king's chamber is, but this is the description of a very small chamber up in the upper middle of the Great Pyramid of Giza.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a tourist attraction, and you have to go up some pretty small places and corridors, and one is on your hands and the knees to even get there.
Yeah.
We have been there now several times, and we have spent hours and hours there just inviting various groups of our own to come and go. Well, so has Greg. And Greg has been there, I don't know how many times, maybe 15 or 20 times, and has been in this small king's chamber.
Yeah.
So we said to Greg, we're going again to Egypt, and we're going to go up into the king's chamber. Remember what he said?
Well, he likes to have fun, because when we said we're going to be in the king's chamber, he writes back and said, oh, well, I left a note in there.
In 1994.
Yeah. So maybe you'll find my note.
Said, so did you?
You know.
Did you see my note?
I know.
Well, of course, you know, he's been having fun. So what we did, I'm going to show you a picture of the king's chamber for a moment. I'm channeling, and so you see the whole thing. But
And then I just need to explain. Our tours were organized by Ilan Cohen, and because we had such a large group, you can only have a limited amount of people in the king's chamber. And so what we did was to stagger the groups. Now, it doesn't make, and we had a channel, so every group that came in, Lee would channel. And so we were able to, how blessed and privileged are we were actually able to stay in the king's chamber, just the three of us, Ilan, Lee and I, while we were waiting for the next group to come in. So we have this space in time when we're there alone in the chamber. And you might think we might do meditation and all that kind of stuff. No, we did some funny little things because Greg told us he had a note in there. So then, Lee, what did we do?
Well, what we did is we started looking around in the chamber. It's pretty dark in there. You had to have a little flashlight to see what you're doing. For little holes in the wall and things that we could say, wouldn't it be funny to put a note, make a note and put it in the hole and pretend we had discovered it?
Yeah, so... So that's exactly what we did. We found a hole, we scribbled a note, put it in there, and then I said, okay, Lee, you need to take some photos of me of finding the note and revealing it. So
here's the first photo, and this is the discovery photo. We discovered there's a note in that hole.
There's a note in the hole.
We're sending pictures to Greg, not from the chamber. There's no reception in there. When we got back down, we did this slowly. Greg, we found your note. This is so exciting, and here's the picture. And here is a picture of Monica retrieving the note, and there she is. And so excited, you reach in there. Hope there's no scorpion or anything else. And you get the note. Oh, look at that. Here is Monica looking at this note.
Unbelievable, right?
I know.
I mean, wow.
And so here's the reveal of the note. Now, folks, we have fun. Please don't write me letters, okay? This is for a good time. Call Braden Services, 1994. And I don't know if you're laughing and you think it's funny. We think it's hilarious.
We thought it was funny. And more importantly, Greg thought it was funny as well. So, because we could tell him, we did get your note.
Greg is still at it. We have other things we've done. We also went down into some recently opened chambers and had some private guides there that he had also seen part of before they were fully opened. And he asked the same thing. He said, well, did you see anything I scribbled on the walls? Which is really funny because you don't scribble.
You're not allowed to scribble on the walls.
And so we took some pictures, and I etched in on Photoshop. Greg was here, right in the middle of a profound hieroglyph, you know, which would just be awful to even think of. We're just trying to be funny.
So we had a lot of fun with that as
that's
well.
That's right. Yeah. Okay, that's the end of our funny time. What's next?
I would like us to have a brief meditation so that we can hear what Cryon's channeled message is for this session. And I'm actually really enjoying what Cryon shares with us. I mean, there's so many different things in these short channels, talking about innate and talking about many things that help us to more visualize the circle of 12. So let's do that. I invite you to close your eyes so that you can attune to the energy of your body in this moment. As you close your eyes, your awareness is able to pull in to the core of your being, and that's where the magic is. The divinity is inside every cell of your body. And in this moment, just feel the joy and celebration that that piece of divinity has through your communication to your own divine self. And allow yourself to have some slow, deep breaths. And from this energetic posture of deep relaxation and allowance, let us now receive the message from Cryon.
Greetings, dear ones. I'm Cryon of Magnetic Service. These times together are so precious for us. They are different, very different from coming in the past to a group of people and giving a message that might not be connected to anything that is germane to what follows. Out of context, you might say, all titled differently. We try to make these messages to flow into that which is the Circle of 12 meditation. If you're here in this time watching this, then we know why. That you have an interest, an intent to hear profound messages. Hopefully you understand about yourself. Not necessarily about larger pictures of the earth or what's happening, What about something even more magnificent? And that would be you. Because you hold the key, dear ones, to the changes around you that often you believe are shaping you, and they're not. No. Your consciousness on this planet as a group of old souls all over the planet are what is shaping what is taking place. You're more in control than you think. I would like to open a door in this channel to a philosophy or a rule or an axiom that you might not have thought of, but that you know must exist. And I'm going to start by saying this. What kind of an artist are you? And you would say either, well, I really enjoy painting and I'm a pretty good one, or you might say, well, I've dabbled in it, not much, or you might say, nothing. I'm not paint. I can't paint. I never will. That's not my talent. So you know I must be talking about a metaphor, and indeed I am. The first premise is this, and you have heard this before, even from the healers on this show. Here is the premise. Everything has vibration. Now that vibration is different from what you might have studied in the dimension you live in, which would be sound or color, a vibration that you could measure, something that vibrates, that goes back and forth. I want you to think bigger than that, because even in a multidimensional setting, all dimensions feature that which vibrates. All reality that you have, that you see, all of it has something that vibrates. I once said a controversial thing. The rocks are alive. The rocks vibrate with a force that tells you whether they're alive or not. Even the rocks, they vibrate. In physics, if you know about atomic structure, you know a rock vibrates. You know the density. You know all of these things. There's vibration in everything. Let's look at you in four dimensions and music. I go here because this is so obvious to all of you listening. You have some favorite songs, perhaps. Perhaps they're not even songs. Perhaps they're just music of some kind that doesn't necessarily sing a lyric or go to a verse or a chorus, but it's just music that you just enjoy listening to. And it might be complete. It might have lyrics, but something uplifts you. Every single one of you. And you're so different. The difference in the music would reflect the difference in that which your experience is, or perhaps your age, but all of you have something you want to listen to because it makes you feel good. So tell me, why does it make you feel good? And that is something I wish to speak of. The why is a system. There is an interface between things that vibrate and your consciousness. There is an interface between those things that vibrate, remember what I told you vibrates? Everything. And you and your consciousness. This means, by the way, your consciousness has a vibration. And when these overlap, you feel it. You have things that make you feel uplifted and good, and you go to them over and over because they do make you feel a certain way. The opposite can be true, especially with music. And those who would score films would know it. They have music and they'll say, well, I need something now that tells you something is coming, something is sinister, something is dark or whatever. And there'll be music that will target that. And your consciousness and your subconscious will hear that in a film and go, oh, and the idea of it will then match what happens in the story. That's vibration. It's profound. Let's talk about vibration in a movie or a story or a book. The vibration of the adventure. Do you know that stories and their outcomes have have vibration. What are the most uplifting stories that you can think of on this planet? Many times they are in the periodicals you read or the poetry that you love, the books, the movies, and they're uplifting stories and you want to read them again and again. Oh, you'll say, I love this part. Look what happens here. Sometimes they're romantic and they'll touch your heart. A story carries vibration. There are those famous writers who have decided that their stories are dark. And they carry a certain kind of vibration, which is the human story, perhaps. Perhaps it's a tragedy, and they do these things over and over and write tragedies only. But you have to admit, there is a vibration there. Some of you will see a film or hear some music or perhaps read a story that affects you so that you can't forget it. It's not necessarily uplifting, but you can't forget it because it's the story of another human, perhaps who went through something, and you relate to it. The story has an interface to your consciousness, and it sticks. It sticks there, and you remember it, and you remember it. If someone has told you something specifically horrific about something that happened to them or their friends, it sticks with you, doesn't it? That interface is part of what I am going to speak of. What kind of a painter are you? And the reason I'm saying this is because I would like to tell you your story, your emotions, all that you believe and do in your life is a vibration. It's like a canvas and a brush, but instead of the colors or perhaps the tunes you might paint on the palette, you paint a attitude, a belief. We have told you before, even in these programs, the vibration of joy, the vibration specifically of laughter, the healing attributes of both of those things well known. How can you hear someone laugh and suddenly you change? That's the interface. The laughter, the story of the laughter, it has a vibration. And that vibration then goes up against, if you want to say, or interfaces or intermingles with your consciousness. That's the system. Whatever the vibration is presented to you as a human being in a multidimensional state of awareness and consciousness, and it affects you. Sometimes it affects you, again, in an uplifting way, and sometimes it doesn't. The storyteller understands that. The artist who paints a picture and uses light in a certain way makes it so that you can go to a gallery and watch the painting, and you look into it and you understand what that artist is trying to say and do. And many times you weep with joy because you finally see what the artist is trying to tell you in the vibration that is uplifting and it goes into your consciousness. Ask anyone who appreciates art. In a gallery, looking and looking, look what that light does. Look at how it is dark over here, but it shows the light so clearly here. It means something. What kind of an artist are you? The palette that you paint on is a vibrational attitude of how you live, old soul. How you approach programs of life that are always there. When you get up and you go to sleep, and you perhaps go to work, or you simply are taking care of things, or at a time like this you call COVID and things are different, you have the ability to paint a picture to everyone around you. What kind of an artist are you? Have you painted your despair to everyone so they could see it, broad brush? Have you then dipped into the darkness and painted as fast as you can so everyone can see how disappointed you are, or how fearful, or how ugly you think the situation is? What colors are you using? So you or your children, or perhaps you're older and don't have the children, perhaps a partner, and if you don't have a partner, you have friends, or those even at the store. What are you painting to them? Can they see your smile? During a time when many are wearing masks, can you show them you're smiling anyway? What colors are you showing? Are you using to portray? You have a palette. And old soul, this is the one we speak of. Is it uplifting, healing, joy? Do you laugh a lot? Do you show others you're not afraid, that you have something inside that's worth knowing about? Because of this, dear ones, I'll tell you, those around you and your children and your friends and your legacy will see a picture of you long after you're gone. What do you think they'll see? What kind of an artist are you? These are the things we speak of in these days. They go beyond that which perhaps you have thought of in the past, but they're all the same. They all speak of the magnificence of the human being. And so it is.
And allow the vibration of that beautiful channeled message from Kryon to percolate up through your body and bring all your awareness back into the room, back into this joyful time that we're actually sharing together. I really, Lee, look forward to these Wednesdays.
Because I do too.
It is a joyful time, and we don't have enough time set aside for joy, especially in today's landscape.
We are meeting so many people. I have never been able to meet some of them. Some of them have worked with me.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where it gets really fun for me, because we get to explore entire mm-hmm. areas that mm-hmm. are new to me and to many who are listening.
Yeah, our guest speaker today is Dr. Bradley Nelson. And let's just make sure he's zoomed in with us. Bradley, are you there?
Yes, I am, and it's great to be here. Thank you for having me on.
Wonderful, wonderful. Welcome. Well, I want to share with everyone a little bit of the bio of our guest today. So let me start by asking a question. Have you ever thought about how much your emotions influence your health? Well, our guest, Bradley Nelson, is the author of the best-selling book called The Emotion Code. And it's no wonder, Lee, that this is a bestseller, because the book, it explains how to identify and release the trapped emotions that block us from wellness.
You realize one of the things that we have here, and every single guest, mm-hmm. we present a premise and also a solution.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And that's why I get
excited. I love that there's solutions here in the book as well.
Mm-hmm. Obviously, we're reading bios here, and so we have quotations we wanted to read as well.
Mm-hmm.
In college, Dr. Brad studied computer programming and dedicated to pursue a career in business, very much like I did. But just 6 months before entering the MBA program at Brigham Young, he had an epiphany. Quote, I asked God for guidance about my future.
And this is a continuation of the quote. One night, I woke up and my mind was overflowing with thoughts of service to mankind and to humanity. The feelings were absolutely overwhelming, and as my head was filled with thoughts of healing and helping the world, a voice that was crystal clear spoke to me, saying, this is a sacred calling.
You have to, wow.
Yeah, I mean, computer science and then possible business.
I know.
To then having that happen.
After graduating from Life Chiropractic College West in California, he began his practice as a holistic chiropractic physician.
Mm-hmm.
And saw a wide variety of patients, many of whom had seemingly incurable conditions. Through extensive study in disciplines such as ancient medical practices,
mm-hmm.
psychology, quantum physics, as well as guidance in his own spiritual practice, very necessary, we understand that, Dr. Bradley discovered that, and here's the big word,
mm-hmm.
packets of unprocessed emotion were the basis of most conditions.
Now, using this knowledge, he's designed processes that have helped thousands of people achieve greater wellness by learning to identify. So that's really important, yeah, to be able to actually identify it. But the more important thing is to how to then release these trapped emotions. So
right,
what
well,
amazing.
It, what I want to do is right before we bring him in to talk, and I know he's ready to go, is that there's one more thing, and it's not in his bio, and it's something that we know because we've studied a little bit about him, and it's profound. He's one of the only ones that I can think of so far, mm-hmm, in all of our guests, mm-hmm, who's actually had a spontaneous remission, but not just one.
Yeah, twice.
Right.
Twice, and all before the age of 14.
Yep.
I mean, that is incredible.
And so knowing what it feels like, and then knowing it's possible, and being able then to go into something that helps humanity in general, mm-hmm, through a book and all, mm-hmm, I honor you, sir, and I'm so glad that you're here. And so I'd like you just to tell us all about it.
Well, thank you both, first of all, for having me on. It's really great to be here and great to be able to speak to your audience. It is true. I had two spontaneous remissions. And I'll tell you about the first one. I was 7 years old, and I was really sick with the measles. My parents had made a bed for me upstairs on the couch in the living room so that I could be near their bedroom. And I had overheard them talking, and I knew the plan for me. You know how parents will talk, adults will talk around kids and think that,
yeah,
for some reason kids can't hear or kids can't understand. But I knew the plan. The plan was I was going to be admitted in the hospital the next morning, and I was going into something called an oxygen tent. And I didn't really know what an oxygen tent was. The tent part of it sounded interesting to my 7-year-old boy brain, but I was too sick to really think about camping. But this particular night, my parents came into the room, everyone else had gone to bed, and I'm lying there on the couch just feeling really ill. And I remember this like it happened yesterday, even though of course it was many years ago. And my mother said to my father, honey, will you kneel down and say a prayer with me so that our boy will be able to get well? And so they did. Now, knowing my dad, this might've been the first time that I heard my dad pray, but I think my parents were worried, very worried about me. So my dad starts offering this prayer, and in the middle of this prayer, something really dramatic happened, and I'll try to describe this. Some kind of a change began at the top of my head, and it went whoosh through my body that fast, and I was instantly healed. Now, to go from being really, really sick one moment to being completely, entirely, vibrantly healthy and totally cured in the next instant is so bizarre and so impossible and so amazing and incredible and so unique that you can't ever forget it. And I mean, I remember every moment of that little vignette like it happened yesterday to me, and it was a long time ago. So I held my tongue. I didn't want to interrupt my dad. But I held my tongue until my dad was done praying, which didn't take long. And when he was done, I said, I'm better, I'm better. Heavenly Father, heal me. I'm well. And they said, that's fine, honey, go back to sleep. But the next day proved it, I was better. So I learned from that experience that there is a higher power that we can draw upon. And so that really stuck with me. And as a young boy, I kind of filed that away. But I thought about that a lot. That changed my perception in a really powerful way. Mm-hmm. So fast forward about 7 more years, and things tend to run in those 7-year cycles, right? I started getting pain in the back, and the pains started off gradually, and then all of a sudden they reached this unbelievable crescendo where these pains would take my breath away or sometimes literally just put me on the ground. They would strike out of nowhere. It felt like I was being run through with a sword or something. I mean, it was really extreme, really terrifying, frankly. So my parents were very worried about me, took me to the hospital, tests were run. My parents were told that I had kidney disease and that I had about a 50-50 chance of getting well, and that there was nothing that they could offer me. They had no treatment for this. And of course, if your kidneys die, and my kidneys were dying, if your kidneys die, at that time, back then, there were no kidney transplants. They didn't know how to do those. So I was done. So my life suddenly had come to a grinding halt, and there was nothing that medically could be done for me. So my parents decided that they would try some alternatives. And my mother was kind of a health nut back then, back in the days when people actually thought you were really a nut and certifiable if you took vitamins and things like that.
Yes, we're familiar with this scenario, sir.
And, you know, it's strange that there may even be some people who still think that way, despite all the
evidence.
I'm
sure there are some holdouts.
Yeah.
So then what?
Well, so they took me to see a couple of holistic doctors, and they practiced out on the edge of town in the middle of they had a trailer house in the middle of a wheat field. Okay. And they took me to see them. Now, these two doctors, Dr. Alan Bain and Dr. Ida Harmon, were old-time osteopathic doctors, and they did a lot with herbs and things, and they were true healers. And I mean, I can remember going there and seeing buses from other states that would come there. People would charter buses to come and see them because they were such great healers. So they started working on me. And within a very short time, within a couple of weeks, I mean, really, I started feeling better. I started feeling improvements right away. But within about 3 weeks, I was practically better. Within a month, it was gone. I was completely well.
Wow.
And my folks took me back to the clinic, and they ran all the tests again just to make sure. And that's when I heard those words, as I recall, spontaneous remission, you know, whatever we did must have helped. And I knew they hadn't really done anything. I was only 13, but I knew that it was these other people that had actually helped me.
Right.
So I decided that's what I wanted to do with my life. Mm-hmm. I wanted to go into the healing arts, and I wanted to do what these people did. And I can remember lying on their treatment table and looking up at them and saying, I want to do this. I want to do what you do when I grow up. And they would say, no, you don't. No, you don't. Because if you go to chiropractic school or naturopathic school or you become an osteopath, they'd say, you will get your head so full of fixed ideas that you won't be able to think for yourself when you get out. You'll be like a zombie. That's what they would tell me.
Wow.
And so when I finally had that experience with prayer where I heard that voice that said, this is a sacred calling that you talked about earlier, that's when I was trying to figure out what to do. I had kind of gotten sidetracked from that dream for a long time. But that was a very powerful answer to prayer that put me on that healing path again. And when I got into practice, I decided, okay, God's gotten me into this. Maybe God will help me with these patients that I'm seeing. And so, so the secret, really, of my success is prayer. Because what happened was I got in this habit of asking for help with every person that I saw. And so, you know, I might have been seeing 20, 30 people a day. And every person before I'd go to work with them, I would just take a moment. And it was a totally private, totally personal thing. And it wasn't any kind of a long, drawn-out prayer. It was really just a momentary pause where I would just silently ask for help. You know, Father in heaven, please help me to help this person in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen. And that was it. I'll tell you something, though. I learned once again that God or higher power, Father, however you might refer to God, you know, I think we're all talking about the same thing, that God is aware of us and everything we're doing all the time. Because there were times during those years when somebody would come in to see me, and I didn't know how to approach their problem. I didn't know how to help them, didn't know what to do. And in response to that very short, heartfelt prayer, that asking for help, there were times when the information would just flood into me like an avalanche of data and understanding. Now, in the 20-odd years that I was in practice in one form or another, that happened as many times as I can count, really, on one hand. So that was kind of the exception rather than the rule. What I've come to understand, though, is that when you pray and you ask for help, that help always comes, but it doesn't always come in the way that you expect or maybe in the way that you want. I believe that the angels around us, those angels that are guiding and supporting us through our mortality, our mortal experience. Those angels are often our departed loved ones, maybe descendants of ours that are yet to be born. And when we ask for help, usually, I believe it's that help comes through those angels. And that help will often come as something very subtle. It'll be an idea that we think might be our own idea, but it's really coming from them because they'll whisper things to our minds. It might be an impression. It might be a thought that we have. And that's usually how those answers come. And so so that was my practice, and that's kind of how it went for many years, where I'm just asking for help with each person and then trying to help them as best I can. And I learned some really fascinating things. And the Emotion Code book that I published in 2007, after leaving practice in 2004, that book is really about what I learned. One of the most important things that I learned during those years was that we have emotional baggage. And, you know, that's a phrase that we often use, usually in reference to other people other than ourselves, right?
Of course, I would say almost always in reference.
I don't have any emotional baggage. I'm being facetious.
Neither do I.
Yes, right.
Me neither. But, you know, what I found was that emotional baggage is very real and very powerful. And what I found during practice was that no matter how old or young my patients were, no matter what they were suffering from, no matter what their condition was, whether it was some kind of pain, you know, headache pain, migraines, neck pain, low back pain, knee pain, carpal tunnel, shoulder pain, whatever it might be, there was emotional baggage that was the biggest underlying cause of that pain. And I also found that emotional baggage is always present and is always a factor in every disease process that we suffer from as human beings. And it was an amazing thing to gradually realize this. And that was part of the impetus for me getting out of practice and writing this book, The Emotion Code, because people had to know about this. 90% of all the physical pain that people have is due to emotional baggage. Now think about that. If you're listening to this right now, you're watching this right now, and you got a headache, you got back pain, neck pain, whatever, you got pain somewhere, I'm telling you right now, there's a 9 out of 10 probability that that pain is actually being caused by the emotional energy of some experience that you went through that is still stuck in your body. Mm-hmm. You see, these bodies of ours are pure energy. Mm-hmm. Even though, I mean, if you look at your hand looks pretty solid, and if you slap it down on a desk, it makes a nice thunk sound. But the reality of it is, our bodies are almost entirely empty space. In fact, some quantum physicists recently calculated that if you could take all the empty space out of every single person's body on Earth, you could fit all 7.8 billion of us into a little box the size of a sugar cube.
Oh, I love it.
Would it be crowded? Well, yes. Yeah. But it could be done, right? Theoretically. So the interesting thing is, see, when we experience, when we're feeling emotions, every emotion has its own frequency of vibration. And since the body itself is just a vibration, it's an energy field, if you're feeling an emotion powerfully enough, your whole body can take on that frequency. So if you're really feeling angry, for example, your whole being can be taking on that specific vibration because every emotion has its own frequency and its own vibration, and they're all different, you see. So when an emotion is powerful enough, if it's too powerful, say, it may become trapped in the body. Or if there are emotions that are maybe coming up for you that you don't want to feel and you suppress those, you bury those, you stuff those emotions, those can create trapped emotions as well. And so we all have emotional baggage. A trapped emotion is literally a ball of emotional energy, if you can imagine, from about the size of a baseball to about the size of a softball. And these things will inhabit the body, and they interfere with our ability to be who we are capable of being, who we are supposed to be. And so when we release that emotional baggage, it can make an immediate change in how we feel. And there are so many stories about this. You know, I have seen so many different cases of depression and anxiety and phobias and panic attacks and PTSD and eating disorders and self-sabotage of all kinds get well, all kinds of physical conditions. And of course, we now have between 6,500 and 7,000 practitioners around the world in 80 countries doing this work and having great results of this. So I just went to our website at discoverhealing.com. And if you scroll down a ways, you'll see the latest three testimonials. We have about 9,643 testimonials. These come in every single day.
Wow. That is really impressive, I must say.
it's amazing.
I love that it's all around the world and you've actually got other healers that are doing this technique, because you're only one person. You can only do so much.
And that's the testimony of the results and of this being accurate, real, valid, mm-hmm. and working.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly right. Well, I realized, and you know, like you say, I realized long ago, I can work. I was working really hard, right? Mm-hmm. Working long days. And sometimes I'd go into the office at 4 a.m. because I was, you know, I was younger then.
But, you're 14.
Not anymore.
Yeah.
But I finally realized no matter how many hours I put in, I'm never going to be able to make a dent in the world. This has to go to the whole world. So here's a testimonial that just came in within the last couple of days, maybe today or yesterday. This is from a woman named Chantel. She says, "One of my first emotion codes releases on myself was a trapped emotion of inherited terror." Now, we can inherit emotional energy at conception from mom or dad that they might have inherited from their mom or dad, and these can go back for generations sometimes. She says, "I had been afraid for a long time to be home alone, especially at nighttime. My entire body would seize up with fear, and I would be certain that I was hearing someone breaking in pretty regularly. I would even wake up at the smallest noise in the middle of the night and have my husband walk around the house to make sure we were safe. If I was going to be home alone or with the kids even for one night without my husband here, I would take them to my parents' house so that I would not have to deal with the fear. After we released this inherited trapped emotion of terror, I have been able to be home alone for multiple days on end and even walk around outside at nighttime with zero fear. I am not constantly worrying about if the house is locked up or if the alarm system is on. I feel completely relaxed and peaceful." So isn't that interesting how some ancestor of this woman's experienced something terrifying, right? That emotional energy became trapped in that person's body. And when that person contributed or conceived a child, right, when they were in that process, that emotional energy was shared to that offspring. And then she doesn't say how far back this one, but we see sometimes these go back 10 or 20 generations. And so that emotion of terror was in her, but it really wasn't hers. It really originated with that ancestor. So isn't that interesting?
I love that. And yeah. I think what's not spoken here mm-hmm. is that her clearing it has also done it for all future generations to come.
For her ancestors.
This is where I think we have real power in clearing it for ourselves and all future generations to come.
That's so you teach the identification and also, I suppose, the clearing process.
Yes, exactly. That's all part of the emotion code. You can learn it all from the book. Mm-hmm. And it's not only the future generations, but it also is the generations in the past. In fact, let me share a story with you. I was at an event once, speaking to a group of about 300 people. I asked for a volunteer. I said, if you're really in pain and if you think you couldn't, that no one else in the room could possibly be in more pain than you, I want you to raise your hand. And so this woman raised her hand and she hobbles up onto the stage and she's limping. She's got this terrible hip problem. On a 0 to 10 scale, she's a 9. It's been going on for a year. And so I tested, found one thing, corrected that, took her pain from a 9 to a 4. And then the next thing that I found on her, and by the way, we use muscle testing or other forms of getting information from the body, other forms of biofeedback, but usually muscle testing. So I have her on up on the stage, and the next thing that I find going on with her is that she has an inherited trapped emotion of, actually it was fear. and she got it from her father. And the subconscious mind knows where these things are originating from. And so in testing her, I got that this came from her father, and he got it from his father, who got it from his father, and it went back that way in the father's line, 12 generations. Now, at that point, when I'm doing a live event, usually what I'll do is I will ask that person's subconscious mind if those direct line ancestors are there with us. And it's funny because they're always there. They always show up mm-hmm. for the release of this energy mm-hmm. because we're releasing this energy, you see, not only from that person who's alive and in their mortal body, we're also releasing it from the spirit bodies of these ancestors who have passed on, right? And so I got a yes from her body. Yes, very strong. Those ancestors were there. And so I released the emotion from her. And the pain was instantly completely gone. And she's literally dancing around on the stage. She goes back and sits down, right? So I finished my lecture and went back to our booth. We had some of our staff there. And about a minute after I get to the booth, this woman comes up to me and here's what she said. She says, "Dr. Nelson," she said, "I wanted you to know something." She said, "I'm one of those people that has the gift to see spirits." And she said, "It's kind of been a blessing, kind of been a curse. I've had this all my life." But she said, "I wanted you to know that when you were talking about those ancestors, those grandfathers of hers," she said, "they were on the stage right there." She said, "I could see them. And I just wanted to verify that to you that was true." But she said, "There was something else going on that I don't know that you're aware of." She said, "What I saw was surrounding the stage, there were at least 200 spirits. And it came to me who they were. They were the spirits of this woman's yet to be born descendants. And they were there rejoicing that they were not going to have to take on this crippling emotional energy wow. from her." And I thought, gee, isn't that just so
now,
cool? How this affects
I just wanted to jump in. I want to jump in for a moment. I wasn't going to do this, and we got about 5 minutes left, but I have to say it. In your bio, I saw that you studied there's physics, and I saw the word quantum physics. Do you know the term retrocausality?
Retrocausality is a very interesting concept.
It's the one you just described. What the physicists say, what happens today can change the past, and you just pegged it. So this is not spooky stuff. I think this is well within what we can do for ourselves. It is not just because we talk about, you know, the souls and all of that. Mm-hmm. What if this all was part of, you know, this is part of God's creation. Physics is part of God's creation. The processes are all there for us. Sorry.
We get excited.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, me too.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, the beauty of this work is that anybody can do it, and it's really simple. The inherited side of this is something that's fascinating and very powerful and can result in powerful healing because, you know, we all can be carrying I think we all have inherited baggage that we carry. We all have ancestors, mm-hmm. and they all had hard times. And so part of us is that baggage from them. But also, you know, we have inherited emotional energies that we picked up during our own lifetimes. Sometimes it's from things we don't even remember. Mm-hmm. And yet you can find and remove that kind of emotional baggage with the emotion code really easily. Kids can do this. Anybody can do it. And the beauty of it is precisely that it is so simple, really, and so easy to do.
So I'm a person who's really fascinated now, and is the best way to get the book, I would imagine, that because you step by step, you would explain it and understand it by getting the book. But is there something in addition to that that you would recommend?
Well, we have our main website at discoverhealing.com. And if you're looking for a practitioner to work with you, we have, like I said, 6,500 plus practitioners in 80 countries around the world. One of the beautiful things about this work is that it is pure energy medicine, and so it can easily be done at a distance, and all of our practitioners are trained how to do that. So most of them work with people in other countries, many of whom they'll never actually meet, and yet whose lives they may very well have changed.
So I'm fascinated by your next book that you're working on right now. You've given us the emotion code, but the next one is the body code. It obviously seems like a natural flow on from that piece of work. Can you give us some teasers about what's going to be in store for us with that book?
Right, absolutely. Well, what I found during those years when I was in practice is that there are really six different kinds of imbalances that cause all of the physical and mental and emotional difficulties that we suffer from. And those things include pathogens, for example, little infections that get into the body instead of housekeeping. They include like coronavirus, for example. They include structural misalignments of things. Any tissue in the body can become misaligned. They include nutrition and lifestyle issues, maybe not getting enough sunlight, or maybe you're deficient in a certain vitamin or mineral. You're not going to be healthy if that's going on. Toxicity, the circuitry and the systems of the body. The body's very highly organized. And then energies, like trapped emotions, energies that shouldn't get into the body, like emotional energies or trauma energies, things like that. So during those years that I was in practice, what I found was that the subconscious mind of the individual is really all powerful. And our conscious minds are kind of along for the ride, but our subconscious minds are the vastly intelligent part of us. I believe that they're more intelligent than we can begin to comprehend. And I think we haven't even scratched the surface really there. But the subconscious mind of each one of us is tied into the database of universal intelligence, the light of Christ, the morphic field, as Rupert Sheldrake would say. It goes by different names, but the universe is filled with intelligence, mm-hmm. and our subconscious minds are connected to that. And so our subconscious minds are genius. And so what I found was I could ask my patients what was wrong with them. When I asked the subconscious mind, the subconscious would tell me. The body code is simply a way to find whatever kinds of imbalances are going on so that you can work on yourself and you can raise that immune system of yours to the highest possible level. And that's really what's going to keep you healthy in the day and age that we're living in. It's not your mask, okay?
Thank you.
It's not the social distancing.
Yeah.
It's being as healthy as you can possibly be.
Right.
And you do that by getting rid of the imbalances going on in the body, mm-hmm. the emotional energies, the trauma energies, things like that, toxins, getting the right vitamins and minerals and things like that in the body. And so the body code is this encyclopedic, but yet very simple and dramatically fast way of finding imbalances and then correcting them. And you can take a look at it. It's in fact, the emotion code chart is in there as well. It's an app that runs on, now it runs on desktops too, but it's available at discoverhealing.com/app. And then you can download it from the App Store, Google Play, and so on. It runs
Perfect.
On your...
Can I? I'm going to ask this because we're almost out of time here.
It's unbelievable that we're out of time
now. Well,
it
tells me something.
Happen?
Question: when is that book coming out?
Well, it'll be sometime next year, probably in the fall.
Okay.
The publishing world, you know, the wheels grind slowly.
Yes, we know. Question is: would you be available to come back when the book is out?
Yes, absolutely. Yep.
Because I'd like to time that for that because just to have you back would be a delight. Your work is far more grander than a half an hour. I think people are starting to realize that we have something here that is just amazing, mm-hmm. marvelous. I thank you so much, my friend. Do you have anything you would like to say to the group?
Well, I would just say that there is a God in heaven, and He is your father, and he loves you, and he's aware of you and knows what's going on in your life. He knows about all your challenges. And what I found in my life is that if you just ask for help, it will come. So just trust and ask, and life can work out.
Beautiful.
Awesome. It couldn't be better.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Dr. Brad, so much. And we're going to see you again, I know, and when the book is out, and for everything you're doing for humanity. That message you got, my friend, is exactly your future and what's going on now. So thank you.
Well, thank you, Lee. I really appreciate it. Thank you both so much.
Yeah. Well, you have all earned a well-deserved break. We're going to have a 10-minute break and then come straight back into the Healing Circle of 12.
Okay. See you then. Welcome back from the break. I hope you got a sandwich or what you needed in 10 minutes.
And how delightful that we had Dr. Nelson joining us for this part of the program.
Indeed.
And I loved the channel when it talked about the vibration of joy. And now we understand the whole interface between joy, laughter, why you can be so affected by music, painting. And I'd never really thought about that whole attitude that gets painted out that everyone can see. It's almost like, well, what is your default consciousness go to, isn't it?
It truly is. Yeah. And what kind of a picture do you paint to others that around you every single day? I think most everyone understands that metaphor because we all know people who are troubled and depressed.
And look,
you feel so sorry that that has to be their attitude.
And tragic, depressing things can happen, and they do happen. Mm-hmm. And it's not to discount that. I don't want people to think that that's what I'm saying. I think it's about having your default position, though, being one of joy.
I always say, when you get out of bed, what do you do first? You know, like
Actually, we can also, we know from each other that even in our depression, we can still laugh at stupid stuff.
We do, and can, and often.
Yeah.
That's the case.
And then that just, it's one foot in front of the other. The next day, you keep laughing at stupid stuff, and then you're laughing at all stuff. Yeah. Okay, so let's now go to the circle of 12. What do you think, Lee?
I'm ready.
Yeah. As we prepare for the circle of 12, let us begin by giving honor and thanks to Mother Gaia. She's our original parent, and Mother Gaia gives us all we need. Thank you, Gaia, for being here. Thank you, Gaia, for loving us. And let us give honor and thanks to the Star Mothers. Thank you, Star Mothers, for being here. Thank you, Star Mothers, for loving us. The Star Mothers are our spiritual parents who came to Earth as part of a grand system to give us the spark of divinity, and this peace of God that lives inside is the power of the God energy within the human being. You are part of the system of the Creator that is biased in love. Let us affirm our willingness to receive the unconditional love of the Creator. I am willing to accept the perfect love of the Creator. I am willing to accept the perfect love of the Creator. I am willing to accept the perfect love of the Creator. And let us now continue towards the circle of 12, and let us affirm that we give permission to connect with the God inside.
Greetings, dear ones. I am Kryon. Come closer. And we say come closer, for this is the metaphor that says, come to a place, if you wish to call it that. Come to an attitude, if you wish to call it that, which is far, far closer than anything else you've ever done. Closer to that which is the creative source of all things. The source that created you is beautiful, more beautiful than the shining sun that blocks out all of the things that are internal within it to your eyes, but that within inside it is filled with the patterns that are sacred. And we speak perhaps in metaphors, but that is all you are going to hear or understand or see in that reality which is yours right now, where you sit, what you're doing. Every single one of these circles of 12 meetings starts in this fashion. And we say, look around, because before you close your eyes, and I'm going to ask you to, before you close your eyes, look at what you believe is real. Because those things which you believe are real are a snapshot, literally, a snapshot, like a picture you hold in your hand compared to that which is truly real around you. It's a fleeting moment in four dimensions when that which is your soul lives in hundreds. Some have said, are you aware, dear human, that you are always in two places or three or four at once? You have that feeling, don't you, anyway? Some feel so strongly about that, they'll say, well, do you believe in alternate realities? And they'll have movies and stories and discussions about perhaps you're on another earth at the same time you're on this one. This is the intuition that you have, but in four dimensions, you build four-dimensional alternate stories. The truth, you are in many dimensions and many realities at the same time, but there is not another earth. There is only this one, an awakening one, one that is going to start seeing other dimensions soon in ways you don't expect to see them. The reality around you, let it go away as you shut your eyes and join me. For this circle of 12, an idea that perhaps you can move into another dimension or many apart from what you're used to, and you can do it because you're enabled to do it. There is no permission needed. Did you get that? No matter what you've been told, you are about ready to move into a bigger part of you, and it means you must understand that there could be lack of knowledge or lack of understanding of what it might be or lack of even feeling that it's appropriate because you don't normally do it. Some have told you not to. Some have said it's not for the human being to go to these sacred places. And this is the departure of my story compared to that which you have been told before. My story is this. Not only do you have permission to open that door and go through that mist, you're going home when you do it. What if home was being multidimensional, being aware of your soul? Not going to the other side, not death. That home is finally where you should be as you walk the earth. The masters who walked this earth were on the earth and they were home. They were filled with love and ability and they were magnificent. And they walked and you could see their footsteps. They were alive and breathed just like you, in and out. Breathing in that which is the sweetness of Gaia, given by Gaia. Breathing out to feed Gaia. Part of everything that was alive on the planet, they were just like you. The metaphor has always been this. You are as magnificent as any master who ever walked this planet, but in this new energy, you're starting to understand that premise. That's why the masters of the planet came, dear ones, to show you the magnificence that is yours, to be human like you, to walk on the planet like you and do magnificent things, because that is who you are. Everything changes and is about to. The physics, even of the atomic structure of you think you are, starts to change, because consciousness is king and queen of all energies on the planet. You control what happens next. You really do. So let's go there. I want to spend some time with you there. It always starts the same, and I want you to see what you always see if you choose. There is indeed a chasm. There has to be. There always is. The circle of 12 is a complete and total metaphoric story of you moving from the known to the unknown and participating in a structure of 12 that you don't have now. The structure of 12 is the metaphor for how the galaxy and the universe works, the processes that you don't even see that are beautiful, consciousness interacting with other consciousnesses. I told you of the picture of the painting and ask you, what kind of an artist are you? This is part of what you're about to do. Does your consciousness allow for the colors you're about to see? The chasm is there. There is a bridge. There's always a bridge. We have done many of these programs, but there are those who hear it for the first time. The bridge is meaningful. How big is it? How long is it? What does it mean to you? Is it one person bridge? Is it a many person bridge? It doesn't matter, dear ones, because it's yours. But how you perceive it may change. Those who have gone to this place many times and will many more times as this series continues and continues will start to see a bridge that they recognize because they are so looking forward to going across it. 31 years ago, my partner crossed his bridge. He went into the unknown, frightened, fearful. It took him 3 years to go truly through the mist. 3 years. Because it was frightening to think that there could be a bigger part of himself. But now in this energy, in this very new energy, you are looking at this bridge, and I'll tell you that eventually that bridge is a friend. Just like when my partner sits to channel and he smiles to himself, saying, here we go again into the mist, the most beautiful place he's ever been or ever will be. I want you to walk with me, if you choose, across this bridge to this wall of mist that is there and always is. A mist that really truly represents passing into the unknown. It is the unknown of you. Come closer, dear ones, as we walk into this mist together. If you want to take my hand, I would like to have you go with me. Don't fear that which is sacred. Don't fear that which is you. Let's walk together there now. What happens now is up to you. There are some who have done this many times, who get to this place and they don't remember anything else. They're not quite ready to accept that there is some magnificence in them that they have not acknowledged. Come with me. In this magic place of multidimensionality where much will make sense and much will not, start walking through a magic land where you see what you wish to see. Some will see the beauty of Gaia, and we have said this before. Some will see the elementals and the friends around you that are also multidimensional. But truly why you are here is to see the multidimensional parts of you, not your family, not your friends, not yet, not the earth, not really. But these things present themselves in whatever way they do right now to make you comfortable and feel you belong here, because you are in your area. You are in an area, if you wish, that is your soul. Come with me into that temple right now. That temple, we have told you, exists. Some have seen it in light. Some have seen it in crystal. Some see it as a cave you go into and disappear. Yet another bridge, if you wish. Any way you want to. Take off your shoes, if you haven't already, because you're going to walk on sacred ground when you start to enter that theater. Come with me. Come closer. As you wish to walk into that place, that doorway, and into that theater. The theater's any size you wish to, a sunken stage below the audience around. It's in the round, that theater. The lights come on, the chair is there. The chair beckons you, as it always does. You're going to sit there and experience something different every single time. And even after I've introduced what it is in the chair for today, I ask you to sit and sit and sit some more. We've designed this transmission for you in that which is your 4D to be seen and enjoyed and heard as many times as you wish. And so you can always return to my words right now as I say them over and over. Come with me down the aisle. There's no one sitting in the chairs yet. There never is as you enter the stage. And sit in the chair. A chair designed for you. A chair that it's a chair. It's a metaphor. Some have asked, well, why don't I stand? And the answer is because the chair represents a position of relaxation, of safety. This is a safe place. The chair could be a royal chair where a queen or a king would sit before a ceremony begins or a show or anything. That's what you're doing. And you sit there. Sit down. Sit in this love chair if you wish. And when you do, everything starts to change. I want you to sit there for a moment. And in your mind's eye, I would love for you to see the changes and the feelings that you're going to get today because of one thing that's going to be given to you that you need so much before you can heal. Before you can move on, before you even talk to yourselves, before you even start to talk about that which might be right or wrong, or the fears, before you start having the ones around you forgive you or wash your feet or any of those things, today there's going to be something else. The audience starts to fill. And again, you see all those who ever were on this planet. You see the angels appear standing in the aisles, the ones that are supposed to be so much more magnificent than humans, and you realize you can't tell really the difference. You see your relatives, your friends. You see something you don't understand. You see those still living, sitting in the chairs, smiling, understanding. It's almost like a part of their soul, apart from them on earth, is sitting there, waiting and nodding and smiling and saying, wait till you see what's next. And you know something's coming, don't you? And then it happens and you realize again there's a feeling of appreciation. Some are even applauding. And the word for the day, dear ones, is acceptance. From God, from the universe, from friends, from family, from teachers, from all that is, from the rocks and the trees. You are fully known and accepted by all, honored, accepted. Once you realize the acceptance of all that is from all those souls around you, you can do anything. The acceptance fills you with a solace of understanding, of peace. Go ahead and smile back to those who perhaps have offended you. because the ones who are sitting there represent that part of their soul that now knows what you do. There's so much here that is not really understood yet. But right now, I want you to feel so accepted, so welcomed by all that is, by me, by those like me, of those that you would call multidimensional, by the creative source, the great central sun knows your name and sings it right now to you in light. Feel that acceptance. And then you can start the healing. Stay for a while, will you? Stay for a while, will you? And sit and be accepted by everything that is. We know who you are, equal in every way.